It's 8:15. I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order. And we don't quite have a quorum yet, but what is on the agenda for today is we're going to hear a presentation from the Pertridge Center for Art Education and from the Minnesota State Academy. And then we have Representative Fritz has a bill. So that's kind of the three things we're going to do today. So before we start, is what I'd like is for Mr. Strom to just kind of give a quick little synopsis on the Pertridge School for the Arts and the State Academy. It's how that kind of fits into our education system here.
Mr. Chair, committee members, a couple documents that might be helpful for you. You've all got your budget books, and the last two sections of your budget books are a discussion of the Pertridge Academy and the Minnesota State Academies for the deaf and blind. So if there's detailed information about performance or student serve, that kind of thing, you can find that at the back of your budget book. The Pertridge Academy and the Minnesota State Academies are somewhat different than most of the things that are funded through this academy. They're actually state organizations like the Department of Education in some ways. So the employees that work at those two organizations are state employees governed by state contracts. They're not school district employees, a local unit of government, but rather a state unit of government. This committee has the budget responsibility for both the Pertridge Academy and the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind. And in terms of budgeting for that, the funds also work differently than for school districts. Both the Pertridge Academy and the State Academies are funded through a line item appropriation for the biennium. There is some per pupil money that follows the students to the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and the Blind. But essentially they're a little different than some of the other things. They show up on your appropriations tracking sheet as separate organizations as well down right after the department budget.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Strom. So I just wanted to have members hear a little bit of that overview. Thank you. Well, today we're very pleased to have folks from the Pertridge Academy here. And so if you would introduce yourselves before you start, and then please proceed. Looks like we have a presentation coming up here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and dedicated staff members. My name is Susan Mackert, and I am honored to serve as Executive Director of the Pertridge Center for Arts Education. It's a pleasure for Pertridge to be here this morning. You probably guessed that we're so excited to be here that we sat before we were called, because we're really happy to be here to talk about the value and the impact of arts education and the vital role we play in the state's educational program. With me this morning are Barry Amadio. Barry is a member of the executive committee and past chair of the Pertridge Center Board of Directors. Dr. Pamela Paulson is senior director of policy. And in the audience from Pertridge, I want to just recognize Dr. Carla Hines, who is our director of the Arts High School. Jeff Pridey, who I think is still traveling, who is our professional development and outreach director, Mike Zabel, who is administrative management director, and Matthew Perrett, who's our chief information officer for Pertridge from Minnit. So this morning we're going to give a little overview, and I promise you that we're not all going to speak. The three of us will speak, because we do want you to have some time this evening. I'm just told that we have about 4 hours. I think that's correct.
If it gets near there, I may cut you off early. So.
But we'd like to provide a little history this morning and then talk about why we feel the investment in the Pertridge Center for Arts Education is so important. And since we have new members, I think it's important to go back to the very beginning that talks about our vision. The vision for the Pertridge Center is that the Pertridge Center is a recognized leader, uniquely positioned to fuse artistic passion and academic excellence, producing creative thinkers who contribute valued perspectives to society. And the mission of the Pertridge Center is to provide all Minnesota students the opportunity to develop and to integrate their artistic and academic abilities to the highest potential. And we do that through three primary divisions. Pertridge Arts High School is our residential program for 11th and 12th grade students from throughout the state. They come and they learn significant academics, but they come to study dance, literary arts, media arts, music, theater, visual arts, or art science. We were really the first STEAM school. Our outreach program is the professional development aspect of the agency that works with teachers in schools throughout Minnesota. Last year we were in contact with about 13,000 teachers, administrators, and teaching artists, and they serve about 220,000 of our state's population of students. We also protect and feel quite strongly about new innovations, and for the past 4 years we've been a recipient of funds from the Cultural Arts and Heritage Fund to allow us to create new integration programs. We've done pilot sites in the Lakes Country region, the Southeast region opened this fall, and these programs are really designed to increase the capacity of teachers and improve student learning through intense collaboration between arts and academic teachers. And then the library is our third department, and our Purpose Arts Library has about 15,000 items for not only the Arts High School students and staff, but it's open to teachers and Minnesota residents throughout the state. So we keep it very much up to date on research, books, media, lessons, curriculum, and other classroom support. Very important part of our program. So now I'm very pleased to introduce Pam Paulson, who's going to give us a little bit of history about the Perfect Center, and it has nothing to do with the fact that she's worked there a while.
Dr. Paulson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, as Sue said, my name is Pam Paulson, and I serve as the Senior Director of Policy at the Perfect Center for Arts Education. Thank you for this opportunity to come in front of you this morning to talk a little bit about the history of the Perfect Center, which you now know was formed in 1985. As a state agency when you, the legislature, passed our enabling legislation. I've been an employee of the Perfect Center nearly since it began. I started as a contractor in 1986 and an employee in 1987. So over the last 26 years, I've had the privilege to be able to help create this center, but also remember the history of this center. So even though I'm not that wonderful in history, I do feel like internally I'm sort of the in-house historian about the Perfect Center's development. But really, to create the Perfect Center for Arts Education, then Governor Rudy Perfect exerted a great deal of energy and political will as he made the arts an actual policy issue in the legislature. Governor Perfect was motivated by several things which were very forward-looking, especially since he was raising these ideas in the early 80s, 30 years ago. First of all, he believed that Minnesota needed to focus on the arts in order to be ready for the global economy. I'm trying to think back 30 years how much I was thinking about the global economy at that time. And he said Minnesota would not be a player in this new landscape if we didn't have a strong focus in the arts. He spent some time in Europe witnessing the importance of the arts and arts education, and he wanted to bring that value, that sense of value for arts and culture to Minnesota. Of course, you know, he was raised up in the range, and he knew a lot about rural Minnesota, where he felt there was a need to serve artistically motivated students, especially from rural areas, because he didn't think that they were reaching their potential or using enough of their creativity and their talents, and he did not want to see anything wasted in terms of Minnesota's future. He also wanted to position Minnesota as a national leader in education. And this is interesting, by showcasing excellent, innovative education at the Perfect Center for Arts Education. That's where he thought that we could try all of these new ideas in education to make it the most effective we could possibly make it in our state. And Governor Perfect was right. The arts are important to Minnesotans. According to a poll done at the University of Minnesota, 95% of Minnesotans believe that arts education is essential or important to the overall education of Minnesota's children. That was 95%. And 92% of Minnesotans believe that the arts are crucial to their quality of life. then a little number in here, estimated impact of Minnesota's nonprofit arts organization is over $1 billion a year on the state's economy. So through the Perfect Center's programs, as Sue described them, professional development, library, and arts high school, we work with students, teachers, and our administrators and artists all across the state to help them design the best education that they can for Minnesota students so that we can have a productive, contributing citizenship that can design the future of our state's economy and way of life. All of us know what it feels like to go to school. We all went to school. Some of us know what it feels like to go to a great school. Some of you are or were teachers and helped create great schools. All of you have been very successful becoming state leaders, policymakers, and state legislators. Either you went to great schools that helped you become successful, or you were driven to create your own future in spite of the quality of education you received in school. But education matters. The Purpose Center wants to help all schools become great because all students deserve the best shot they can have at achieving their potential. And part of making a school great is including the arts as a core part of the curriculum. It's where students learn to use their imaginations, to come up with creative ideas that can be turned into innovations that will add to our quality of life as well as our state's economy. The Partnership for 21st Century Skills tells us that businesses want employees who can demonstrate skills in the areas of creativity and innovation, critical thinking and problem solving, communication and collaboration. These are the skills that the arts bring to schools for both teachers and students. As you know, teachers are a key ingredient in helping students to succeed, so we work with them side by side in their schools to help them build the skills that they need to build their students' skills for the future. You probably remember a teacher who is particularly important to you. Maybe he or she mentored you or took your learning to a new level because they saw something in you that even you may not have seen at that point. And we try to help teachers take their skills to a new level. Deborah Meyer, who's a very famous educator, says powerful thinking should be going on by the adults who keep company with the kids. And I will give you a sample of some of the powerful thinking and good work the Perfect Center has been involved in over the past couple of decades. You actually have a little history in your materials that you can refer to later. But in about 1986, as I said, about the time I started, we began programming in over 50 communities around the state in conjunction with their local arts and education resources. And we were working everywhere from International Falls to Morris to St. Cloud to Laverne and every place in between. Then in 1991, after we had moved out to Golden Valley and been there for 2 years, we graduated the first class of the Arts High School. And I have to tell you that that was an amazingly creative, highly creative group of students who were desperate for a school like this to meet their artistic and their academic needs. And they're very active today in all walks of Minnesota life as young adults. In 1994, you gave us additional authority to promote arts education in elementary and secondary schools statewide. In the mid-1990s, we partnered with the Department of Education to develop the very first set of Minnesota academic standards in the arts. And Minnesota was looked at as a leader at that time, actually still is. The Perfect Center has been instrumental to helping those standards be revised now two additional times in 2003 and 2008. To go along with those standards and to help teachers effectively implement the standards, we published curriculum guides with the first two sets of standards that went to every single school in Minnesota, elementary, middle, and high school, in order to make sure that teachers knew how to help students meet these new high learning expectations. In 2004, we assisted the Minnesota Board of Teaching to develop alternative licensure. Now, that's a while ago. That's 9 years ago already. And our teachers piloted what it would look like if they could earn their license by demonstrating through a portfolio all of the experiences that they had had that led up to being qualified to teach. And as Sue pointed out, we've received Arts and Cultural Heritage funds since 2010 to do programming in Lakes Country in the Southeast region. In 2011, we were honored by the College Board with an award for excellence and innovation in the arts. This past fall, we released the first statewide study on the status of arts education in the state called Building a Legacy, Arts Education for All Minnesota Students. And currently, we have staff members involved in designing new standards at the national level in arts education. So over the past 20-plus years, we've worked with thousands of students and teachers to help each student have access to a great education that includes the arts. We practice what we preach. Each year, we refine our work so that we can maintain an innovative edge and remain a valuable state agency that contributes to the lives of students and teachers statewide. So to conclude, we not only want our students to learn how to make a living, we also want them to learn how to make a life. And I'll turn it over now to Barry Amadio, immediate past chair of the Purpich Board of Directors.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Paulson. We do have a couple questions, but I think we'll wait till all the presenters are done. So, Ms. Amadio, you would please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, my name is Barry Amadio. I'm also the executive director of the Rochester Arts Council and an actor for Mayo Clinic, but I'm here primarily as a member of the board of directors for the Purpich Center for Arts Education, and I've had a pleasure of serving on this board for 6 years, again, most recently as board chair. The governing board of Purpich consists of up to 15 persons appointed by the governor with representation from each of Minnesota's 8th congressional districts. And I, being from Rochester, I represent the 1st congressional district. And over the past few years, we have been developing a board with members whose expertise covers management, best practices in education, and economic development. And each member may serve no more than 2 consecutive 4-year terms. In addition to board and executive committee meetings, board members also serve as leaders on one or more of the following board committees: budget and finance, board development, legislative liaison, personnel, of which I am the current chair, appeals, and nominations. It is truly a pleasure, has been a pleasure, to serve on the Purpich Center board, and I want to thank you for your work in making certain that Minnesota's students receive the best in education. We will continue to do our part in making certain that this vital state agency continues to support its mission of helping to bring arts education to all Minnesota students. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So, Mr. Chair, if you may recognize me, I'd like to talk about the nuts and bolts on why we feel we should continue to make this investment in Minnesota.
Ms. Mackard, please proceed.
Thank you. Many of us involved in arts education feel that the case for arts education has been made and made again and made again and made again. We, of course, watch all of the studies that are coming forward that show the intrinsic value of arts education, its impact on academic learning, and the positive effects that employment in the arts has in the economy. In your folder, you have a number of citations that refer to research. I'm not going to go through all of that. I'll just pull out a few things that really we know that studies measuring creative thinking, critical thinking, problem solving, and reasoning all find that these functions improve and increase when you add arts education to the educational mix. We also know the number of national studies that show that when you add arts education, the strong, strong correlation for students, the positive emotional development, the deep engagement in learning, the motivation to learn and to understand, a decrease in disciplinary issues in schools, self-awareness, self-concept, and a great deal of self-confidence. These are the systemic issues that affect learning, that affect achievement, and it's probably why we're so passionate after 28 years of knowing that the research that continues to come out, we know that that happens. Business Week magazine has done a series of articles on arts education because we know that we are a big part of the economy. And they said that an article recently that the game is changing. It isn't just about math and science anymore, although these are very important components and disciplines. It's about creativity, imagination, and above all, innovation. An IBM study of 1,500 corporate leaders and public sector leaders across 60 nations and 33 industries concluded, among other things, that creativity is now the most important leadership quality for success in business outweighing even integrity and global thinking from their skills. And we follow an individual called Sir Ken Robinson. He is author of a number of books on creativity and education, and he indicated he works with a lot of Fortune 500 companies, and again, they're always saying, we need people who can be innovative, who think differently. And then, of course, we follow federal studies, the U.S. Department of Labor indicating that the creative industries are America's largest export, with more than $60 billion annually in overseas sales. The part that we're most concerned about and watch is that 85% of employers are concerned with being able to hire enough creative people. And we're here to do that, and we've watched in Colorado, for example, in their full economic development entity for the state, they are hiring positions described as creative development leaders to really embrace the creative industry. So, again, you have a lot of research. Let's talk about our request and then open to questions. As a linchpin in the state's ability to improve educational outcomes through arts education, the center is requesting that the Minnesota State Legislature provide continued support for the work of the center. We have been pragmatic. We have been evaluating our full system and structural organization for the past few years, which is what allows us to come forward and say, no, we don't want more money on our general fund. Of course we want more money. Everyone wants more money. But we're very cognizant and sensitive to the state's position and feel that we have an obligation to be good stewards of those dollars as a state agency. But we ask for continued general fund appropriation. We did offer in the last session, along with all state agencies, to take a percentage cut. We did. We took a 5% cut. And so we have learned to live with that cut. But again, we're asking for the continued support. We get basically $6.7 million each year. And that supports the Arts High School, where we have 100% graduation and that we're very proud of. And we send young people to college who would not normally go to college, mostly because of lack of affordability with our students across the state. So they tend to get access to about $2.5 to $3.5 million in scholarships each year. Our professional development in the latest research by the Minnesota Department of Ed among curriculum directors, 87% indicated that they need and want more help from the Perfect Center. In terms of the library, which is another part, we feel very strongly about protecting a state library. MDE, unfortunately, a number of years ago, had to eliminate their statewide library, so we are access for Minnesota teachers, and we feel it's very important. And all of that comes under our general fund appropriation. We are also looking at $1.2 million to assist us in centralizing IT services. Unlike school districts, we cannot levy for IT services, so we are woefully behind school districts that we are serving and trying to serve. And we also recognize, in order to meet that 87% that want more, we have to do more with distance and online learning. And aside from the fact that our wonderful individuals from Minnet tell us that we're a little out of date and we're not connected to the central systems well, and a great deal of this request that was developed in collaboration and full support of Minnet is to bring us up to date with migrating the administrative staff to state technology standards and developing programs and to fix our server and a number of things that we simply must do. So we expect that to improve in many, many aspects, education inside and out. We weren't going to address this today, but just to make you aware that there will be a bill coming forward to give us authority to govern another school. Their board has asked us to come forward, and that takes further discussion, and when we have a bill, we will come forward with that. We also are in our Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, we'll be asking for $2,324,000 to continue the work of our legacy project in the Southeast and Lakes Country regions. We hope to expand one to the Northern region, and we'll add some courses that teachers can access online and do some further work to our statewide study. In conclusion, again, the College Board is such a marvelous national organization. They are the bastion of tests, national tests, SAT and whatnot, and we've been delighted to follow their research in the last 3 to 5 years on arts education. And they've concluded that students in the arts continue to outperform their non-arts peers on the SAT. And it's one of the reasons why they looked closely at the Purpose Center and gave us the award that Dr. Paulson mentioned earlier. And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that Dr. Paulson serves as a valued trustee on the College Board. So we're very pleased that they are recognizing the value of arts education. And again, in a second conclusion, one last statement from one of our alums. This is one example. Sometimes people think arts education, you're creating all these artists. No, we're taking those skills that artists have, the creativity that we all have, and helping them have jobs that make them successful in society. And Tafeta Elliott is from the class of 92. And she wrote us and said that she still relies very heavily on her music and literary arts training from Purpage when designing auditory stimuli. She's a neurobiologist at Columbia University, and we're very, very proud of her. But it just represents one of many success stories with all of our individual students and the things that they do. It is extraordinary. So that really concludes our presentation, and we would be more than happy to respond to questions.
Thank you so much for that presentation. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome. I have had many meetings with these gals, and it's good to see them. Dr. Palmer, I have a question about crosswinds. Could you talk to us a little bit about the Crosswinds Art and Science Program? And I know that your growth is noted in the report. But could you also talk about your proficiency scores as your students take the MCAs?
Okay, Ms. Dr. Paulson.
No, I think Ms. Macker. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the Crosswinds proposal is part of the East Metro Integration District, and they asked us in December, the board asked us to submit a proposal to govern that school, and we looked at all of their proficiencies, our ability as an organization to take on further and the mission, and concluded that it fits well within our mission. And this was a school that was set up as voluntary integration, 50% students of color, 50% free and reduced, one-third special ed, and very much mirrors many things within the Arts High School. And look at their testing scores, they are advancing. They exceed a number of the elements within the state, and in terms of math, they're at 63% students that met or exceeded the standards, and so we're still looking at that full proposal. It's a year-round school. In the fall, 65% of their students in the fall of 2009-10 met or exceeded the expected grade level growth in literary. And so it's really it's a school that has been in existence for over 10 years now, and they're now showing the results of bringing full integration, not just the student body, but the curriculum itself.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, would you use the... Thank you.
So you govern this. Does your staff work at Crosswinds, or do you just govern?
Ms. Mackert.
The proposal that we would bring forward would be to keep the school intact as it is. We would govern we would serve as the governing body, and certainly there would be likely some synergies in terms of staffs, but they would we would maintain their separate entity as an organization and as a school, because it is effective and it is working.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I'll just ask a couple more questions. What is your total funding when you include grants, cultural heritage, state, to serve 150 students, correct? That's what you serve, 100? How many students do you serve?
Ms.
Get over at the Purpich.
We can serve up to 310. We serve about 300.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. So what would be your total? Thank you, Mr. Chair. What would be your total input of dollars per year or per biennium?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I think it would be best if I ask my business manager to respond to that. We have over $8 million when we add also the Cultural Arts and Legacy Fund to that, which is an important part of it, and some revenue that we obtain from parents for residence hall and other factors. But if I may, Mr. Chair, introduce Mr. Mike Zabel, who's our Administrative Management Director.
All right. Mr. Zabel, if you would introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Mike Zabel. I'm the Administrative Management Director at the Purpich Center for Arts Education.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the total funding for the agency is, well, we get the 6.7 from the appropriation. We get $800,000 a year for legacy funding, and then we collect in revenue from Families for Students upwards of $500,000.
And then, Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson.
One last question. How about from grants from McKnight or whatever?
Right.
Mr. Zabel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we currently are not receiving any grants, and we hope to receive some in the future.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And this would be for any one of you, maybe even the board chair. Is there any opportunity on this proposal that you're bringing forth in technology to find an outside source to partner with you, or do you have that also in mind, that state funding in addition to outside sources would help you further develop your IT?
Ms. Mackert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we're in an odd position as a state agency in that a number of foundations and other organizations will not fund state agencies, and some don't fund education. Mm-hmm. And so in our IT program, in fact, the Minnesota Department of Education had received federal dollars for technology, and we did not qualify because of our position. And that's why, with the assistance through the merger of technology into what was OET and now Minute, we feel quite confident that what Minute has brought forward in terms of assessing our needs, that it is something in the $1.2 million that simply must come out from state revenues here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, through the years have enjoyed hearing from your organization. You know, a lot of people get their impressions from Fame and Glee and, you know, some of the those type of shows that are quite popular. But, you know, I've really enjoyed your discussions, and you bring home that you're a different entity, and that really you do connect across the state and understand. I think the younger generation would understand the need for upgrading the IT so you can, you know, distance communicate, distance learn, be able to do things and leverage your skill set to the teachers across. I've had, I think, three teachers just yesterday who came and mentioned your programs to me, and they're down of, you know, of course, in my area. But I've talked through the years with teachers from you know, Western, Southwestern, and other parts of the state that appreciate, as you know, different forces have changed the Department of Education, that they've been able to bring in these things that excite the students. And, you know, in teenagers, you know, school can get dry, and you know, adding some excitement and adding controlled, well-focused excitement.
I don't know what the wrong
you know, it makes for a much better environment for the kids, because if they're enjoying it and they've got a little fun now and then, it's great. I've been involved with the speech and the plays and thespians and performing arts in the school, both as when I was young and with my kids, and it allows that creativity in a good way, instead of if you don't allow them that creativity, sometimes it'll show up in ways we might not like. So I for one want to thank you and appreciate the further commitment to cross-pollinate and help the state with what you're growing in your center. Thank you.
Ms. Amadio?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, and Representative Quam, thank you for that. I just want to say that, and thank you for pointing out that it's statewide, because I think sometimes, and I had the same misconception before I actually went on the board, is that this is a FAME school, and the focus seems to be on the fact that there's 300 students, and it seems like there's millions of dollars going to it. We have an impact throughout the entire state, just as Representative Quam said. And one of our new programs, quite frankly, is Art Science Program. We're just one of a handful of schools that was accepted to be in this. And it is such an excellent program that Mayo Clinic Center for Innovation has requested to be a mentor for this program, and they've continued to do that. And maybe I'm a little biased because I work for part-time for Mayo Clinic, but they don't offer to mentor people unless they feel that there's some valid reason to do so. So that's, quite frankly, a coup for the Purpose Center.
Thank you. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, testifiers. My question can be answered by anyone. Could you please elaborate on how the students are selected to participate in this incredible opportunity?
Ms. Mackert?
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, that's a very good question. Our students do go through an application process. It is really governed by policy, state policy for us. And they apply. We have a February 1 deadline, and it's an application process that deals with exploring their creative abilities as well as their academic abilities. And every Saturday in March, we bring students in. It isn't to look at, we don't at all look at the best artists. We look at their ability. They come to the Purpose Center for a number of reasons. They're applying because they have such ability in the arts that they aren't getting enough in their home school, their good schools back home, and or because they think so creatively that they're unable to apply themselves. So we have an open application process. In fact, for our juniors, it is open to any student coming in. If you apply as a senior, you have to have at least a 2.0. And in a panel that they present to, they have to present to a panel of arts, academic, and outside teaching artists to really explain themselves and explain why they want to come to this school. We're very sensitive to the fact that with a residence hall, with 11th and 12th grade students, with students from across the state, some who have never been away from home, that we look for their ability to succeed. And we have too many applications, more than we can accept. We each year have to turn away somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 to 150 students.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, spending the time. So thank you. We will look at the minutes. Anyone have had a chance to look at the February 13th minutes? While we're Representative Ann Zelk moves the approval of the February 13th, 2013 minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. A motion prevails. The minutes are approved. So next we'll hear from the Minnesota State Academies. And we have Superintendent Mr. Harper. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Fritz.
Chairman and members. Thank you for having us before you today. We have a bill. I am Representative
Representative Fritz, I think we're going to do the presentation first, if we could do that.
Okay.
That'd be all right? From the academies.
All right.
Good morning.
If that's all right, Mr. Harper.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, committee members, it's a pleasure to be here.
And would you state your name, please, for the...
Sure. My name is Brad Harper. I'm the new superintendent down at the State Academies.
Thank you.
It's always awkward to start a presentation with an apology, and I have to do that. This is my first committee hearing I've ever been to. I'm nervous and will hopefully speak slowly and with some logic to my presentation.
Mr. Harper, usually when a first-term legislator presents a bill, there are treats for the committee. Oh!
Mr. Chairman, I brought you some.
I should not have said it. I apologize, Representative Fritz. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, and as we know, it is Valentine's Day. And this is maybe for rural members, but I normally do not want the use of cell phones. But if you forgot to tell your wife or spouse or significant other happy Valentine's Day, you can text at this time if you want. Quickly, if you forgot, I will allow the use there. And Representative Grunhagen was at the township officers today and gave a little story about his happy Valentine's Day this morning. So anyway, with that, you're off the hook, Mr. Harper. You're sitting good.
I still have to explain that normally I would have a presentation, or we would have a presentation in much more detail than we have at this than just my improvised comments. The State Academies, I've been there since August, so it's a little bit more than 6 months. And the learning curve, as people talk about, is kind of a straight line going up. And I know that many of you have experienced that same type of situation. I'm learning about the system. I'm learning about the different communities that I work with. We work with two different communities, the deaf community and the blind community. The Minnesota State Academy consists of two different schools. One, the State Academy for the Deaf, and the State Academy for the Blind. What's curious, and I found this out, is that we have two groups who cannot communicate with each other, and I can't communicate with them in total. We have a group of deaf people who cannot hear the blind people. We have a group of blind people who can't see the signing of the deaf people. So it creates an unusual challenge in terms of communication. Just a bit of history about the schools. They've been in existence since about the Civil War. So we've been around a long, long time. We've got a long established history of doing good for deaf students and for blind students across the state. We travel in from all over the state. We have students from Bemidji. We have students from Winona, Duluth, Springfield, all over the state. We have demographic data that shows the majority or many of the students are coming from the metro area. So we have students from a lot of different areas. What's important to realize, what's critically important to realize, that this is a pre-K through 12 educational setting on both campuses. In addition, they're all special education students, so that the usual mainstream model that people refer to is definitely different, because we have individual needs that must be addressed in terms of educational needs and that the students have. There are approximately 200 students on both campuses. Students may be severely cognitively delayed. Some may be college ready, so we have to be able to provide education for deaf students on that continuum and blind students on that continuum. We have students that are extremely limited in terms of mobility. They're in chairs, they need to be assisted with basic daily living skills. To students that are able to be athletes on some of the best teams in the state. So we have that continuum to also factor into our educational program. Importantly, I want to invite all of you down to the academies. Come down and see what's happening in Faribault. We don't need a lot of time in order to put together a tour, but I would truly want to invite you down there. It's an astounding organization. That's pretty much all I have to say at this point. I would gladly answer any of your questions, and in future presentations to committees, we will have a more sophisticated presentation. Watching the presentation from Purpich Center was pretty astounding. They really have their act together. So with that, if you have some questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Any questions for Superintendent Harper? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Matt, Mr. Chair. Yeah, see, I know a family that attended your school, and then they went on to college in Washington, D.C. Isn't there a college for the deaf and blind in Washington, D.C.?
Mr. Harper?
Yes, it's called Gallaudet University. It's got a long established history, and many of our students go there. We also have many of the alumni and parents that have gone to Gallaudet also, and they are very, very positive about that experience.
Yeah,
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I just want to tell you this particular family situation was just tremendously satisfied of the experience in Faribault and also in Washington, D.C. at that college. So keep up the good work. And what percent of your students continue on to higher ed? Is it the majority of them?
Mr. Harper?
I don't have those specific details. That's part of the learning curve is to become much more familiar with the demographic data in terms of where students, where their home is, what happens to them as they leave our facility. Typically in special education, there's some transitional data that is collected. I'm not sure what our data represents at this point. I know that at the state level, that follow-up data for transition and for students after they leave high school is not as detailed as people would like to see it.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. You did just fine. I was more worried for Representative Fritz than... I'm just curious. So we have, there was something you said that caught my ear, and I've known about, obviously, the academies for many years have been very supportive. I think they're very fine institutions that reflect well on our state's commitment to equal high-quality access for all students. And this academy does provides exactly that. But I'm curious... Are the students expected to meet the same academic standards of students in other regular public schools? And how do they do in that regard? And are there different things that you have to do then in order to assess how they're doing in that regard? Those can be very long, deep questions, answers, but maybe you just give us a flavor for what the approach is and what the expectations are at the academy for the students in regards to our state's high standards.
Superintendent Harper.
What an extremely sophisticated question. You hit on a variety of topics that are of extreme importance to us. We are right now looking at the state standards in terms of how they're implemented in all of the classes on both campuses, from the youngest students, 4 and 5 year olds, through the 18 year olds. We are working with both of the academies have ongoing professional development to embed the standards within the existing curricula. Unfortunately, over the past few years, there has not been sufficient resources for them to work during the summer months, as typically occurs in most schools, to develop curriculum and to refine that and to make sure that the standards are embedded. We have contacted Dr. Lyle Kosky from University of or from St. Mary's University to work with us during this school year and over the summer, sometime over the summer, when teachers will be able to assess, or not assess the standards, but to look at the standards that apply to their different curricular areas, to make sure that they're embedded into the curriculum and make sure that there's assessments that are appropriately designed to assess those standards. So to specifically answer your question, the students at the academies, all the students, are expected to reach the same standards that other students across the state meet. Now, having said that, they're all special education students with a variety of skills, and so they're special, and through their individual educational plans, they're able to find different measures to indicate progress towards those standards. So that's very typical of the special education model, and that's what we want to be able, that's what we are doing, and that's what we will continue to do. With Dr. Kosky's leadership, I think we will find an increase in focus on our academic efforts on both campuses, and we will begin to resolve some of the internal professional dialogues about language and whether how we deal with Braille, how we deal with ASL on the different campuses, and incorporate that into an initiative to focus on those concepts through a literacy approach. So I think that gets to most of your questions. Your issues about testing, that's very, very difficult because we have students with varying abilities to communicate, and the state assessments don't always take that into account in terms of how the assessments are given, particularly the graduation assessments or the Minnesota Comprehensive that are, you know, transferring into that graduation model or the graduation assessments. So we do administer the test. I'm not comfortable or knowledgeable to talk about the results at this point, though.
Well, and Mr.
Representative Mariani,
follow up. I do a lot of channeling in this committee, so I think I'm channeling Representative my dear friend Representative Briner. But I think what I'm hearing is that, I mean, one is we could talk about accommodations to assessments, and obviously that's going to be a real big deal, you know, with this student population, whether it's at your academy or elsewhere throughout the state. But I think the intriguing and perhaps powerful and arguably more accurate and fair work for us, not just at the academy, frankly, but I think throughout the state, goes to the nature of the assessments themselves and not just the instruments that we use to deliver them. And I think that's part of what we constantly have struggled with here in terms of developing a powerful policy frame that provides the kind of flexibility or doesn't provide the kind of flexibility, you know, to all our schools. And I want to learn more about how you're proceeding with your professional staff and your learning environment in terms of moving toward hopefully more intelligent and actually much more applicable, relevant assessment approaches, which I think is not just a challenge for your students, but frankly I think it's a challenge for all students in our state and all schools in our state. So I think, frankly, Representative Fritz, I think the academy can actually be a potential teacher of good practices, not just for this student population, but for all our students in this regard.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mariani. Yes, the academy should be, they are a role model. And, you know, I'm not just saying that because I live there. I have had a long time commitment to the state academies. My husband's grandmother came here from Germany with John Huppenbecker, her deaf brother, over 100 years ago. And he was a student there and graduated from the Faribault Deaf School. He was profoundly deaf. And I met my husband much later, and I met Uncle John
And Uncle John, I was working in the bowling alley. And though in those days they didn't have pin setters, he was the pin setter. And I was very hurt when I heard people call him by the name, Dummy. And that's what he was known as. And it's always not set well with me, and it shouldn't with any of us, that we would be name-calling someone who is deaf. And I became involved, more involved with the state academies through my nursing career. And now, with my legislative career, it's just come full circle. So I do always like to share that story about Uncle John Hoopenbecker and what a wonderful man he was. And he taught other people games. He would make wooden games, like the old Rubik's Cube. I think he would have probably been a rich man had he had an opportunity. But he made little wooden games and taught us. That was our fun. At Uncle John's and Grandma Anna's. So I do have a strong commitment to the schools. I do invite you, Superintendent Harper, as also invited you down. Come down. I'll drop everything to take you there. And to it's such a wonderful opportunity. You don't see disability. You see abilities. Oozing out of that school. And when I go to the graduation exercises and they come up in their caps and gowns to get their diplomas, I have such a feeling of pride in their accomplishments. So it's our school. We own it. It's a Minnesota institution. So come down and visit your school and see your students.
Thank you for that invite. Thank you for those comments.
Thank you for hearing me.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mariani covered basically what I was going to say. But there's one thing I just noticed in the brochure, that you don't have wrestling as one of the sports. is that because it was delisted from the Olympics? Or?
You have a volunteer culture.
Representative Newton, I tell you, you would bring that up today. You don't have to answer that, by the way, Mr. Harper.
If I may.
You, go ahead.
If you talk to Ridley on the and Zach on the MSAB campus, you'll find that they have gone to a wrestling tournament this year. So we also have had several girls also on the wrestling team there. It's less formal than some of our other athletic events. But they have been participating.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe
very much.
Maybe it'll be relisted on the list.
May. Thank you much. Say, Superintendent Harper, I was wondering if you're prepared to talk about, you've got a base funding request, but you're also asking for some additional funding for an activities coordinator and a library coordinator. Would you care to speak to that?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair. Grab my notes here. And as usually happens when you have your notes all organized, so you can find everything instantly, you can't find what you're looking for. So the two positions that we are talking about are a lending library. Well, let's back up a little bit and give us some background information. There are two resource centers that have been housed on the academies, one for resources for blind students, the other for resources for deaf students. Those resource centers just recently were transferred, or responsibility for those resource centers were transferred from the Minnesota Department of Education to the academies. So in that process, we have needed to assume responsibility for all of the materials and all of the equipment to house that, to organize that, and then to send that out to the various people that want that information, teachers, parents, students throughout the state. So that those resource centers have been a very, very important part of our outreach program to stay connected with people and provide support to individuals, deaf and blind individuals across the state. With the transfer of responsibility came no staff, no additional funding. So we have to absorb that somehow in our budget. And so we requested from the governor's office to add that lending library clerk. That's the term we've used for that. We're looking at that to start off with as a 10-month position, possibly expanding to a 12-month position, but at this point we wanted to parallel that of the school year. The lending library clerk's position will have multiple functions. One is to organize all of the existing materials and equipment that have been purchased with the resource centers, or with resource center funds. The goal is to catalog and enter all of that information into a searchable database. That searchable database will be online and available to all individuals across the state. Currently, we have information that's stored in a standalone database, which is helpful for us, but doesn't help anybody in War Road or Marshall or Owatonna. So that searchable database will be a big, big benefit, and that's one of the roles of that lending library clerk. Also then, obviously, comes the need to send that material out to recatalog it when it's received again. We are looking for that person to have sensitivity when responding to requests from deaf and blind individuals. And our goal is to continue to provide those resources to the different constituents and different people, both deaf and blind, across the state. And that's the intent behind the lending library clerk's position. The big difference here is to add that searchable database. That will be a huge, huge improvement. And that was a recommendation from Kristen Oyen, the state consultant for blind and visually impaired individuals.
Superintendent Harper, then there's also a request for an activities coordinator?
Yes. That's an interesting position, Anna. And as we've talked about it on site, there has been commentary that, well, don't we have people to do that already? And then we talk about some issues. But before I get into some of those examples, the activity coordinator's position may be more appropriately titled residential life coordinator. There are an enormous number of after-school activities that are planned and carried out on both campuses, both for the deaf students and for the blind students. This new position will oversure and ensure that after-school activities are meaningful and developmentally appropriate. That's an important statement, because we have students that are very mobile, very active, very capable, and students that are not, that don't have those characteristics. And so those after-school activities need to include both groups, or all of those groups, in that continuum. So developmentally appropriate activities, it's very, very important. The coordinator will make sure that activities are properly scheduled, clearly communicated to parents, guardians, and staff. And that is sometimes not always done with as much efficiency and timeliness as we would like. Components of the position will include the ability to troubleshoot and correct communication breakdowns and scheduling conflicts. That was been the interesting discussion at site council meetings. Well, I don't know if we need this position, but you know, we can't get this scheduled here because there's a conflict. We can't find Phil to get a bus set up for this, and who do we call about that? The troubleshooting issue between two campuses is an important factor to try to resolve. And this activities coordinator or residential life coordinator needs to have those personal, interpersonal skills to be able to resolve those issues that surface on a regular basis. They also need skill in developing and expanding and planning daily dorm activities. That has been an increase over the last few years, where rather than letting students kind of find activities after school, the dorms have been planning them out very, very actively in terms of scheduling different activities. So it's not just simply either athletics or homework, but it's more in-depth activities for the students. The activities director will also have to have a willingness to assist resolving parental concerns. Their parents have questions. I didn't know about this. What about that? Why can't my son or daughter go here? And that coordinator will be able to assist with those concerns. There needs to be a capability to work with campus leaders, the athletic director, the recreation therapist, school staff, to organize athletic events, practices, off-site trips, and competitive academic events. We just had the one of the groups from the State Academy for the Deaf compete at a national competition, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember the exact name, but they came home with first prize and a nice display award for their first place finish. And I believe that was a college. And then additionally, there's a sensitivity that the coordinator needs to have sensitivity to hearing and deaf and blind individuals and groups. So that, again, you're not representing one particular faction, but you're representative and you're sensitive to the needs of both communities.
Superintendent Harper, what is the request amount for those two positions?
The request amount, I believe, is, find the notes. I believe it was $225,000.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question might be for Mr. Strom. Do the academies receive funding from the permanent school trust fund? Are they part of that process?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, members, the academy funding comes primarily in the state grant, but then the general education revenue follows the students to the from the resident district to the Faribault Academy. I don't think the permanent school fund money, which is about another $30 per pupil, is in that category, but let me check a spreadsheet here real quick.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Harper.
I want to respond to your to the comment about the general ed revenue. There's a threshold on that general ed revenue. It's from 100. It's for students more than 175 students. So it's not for all of the students, but it's just for the number of students above 175, and that's based on a child count day of, I believe it's May 1st. So there's some conversation about lowering that threshold, but that's hasn't developed much more momentum than beyond the conversation stage.
Representative Woodard.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Superintendent. So what you're saying is that general ed revenue does not follow for the first 175 students and then does? I guess I'm a little confused by that.
That's my understanding.
Is that your understanding, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, I'll check on that.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Harper.
Excuse me, my protocol is a little rusty here. That statute I think that you're going to refer to is Minnesota Statute 248.02. Nope, wrong one. 125A.65 subdivision 8C.
Very good. Seeing no more questions, thank you for that presentation. And I think we'll move now to House File 457, Representative Fritz's bill. Do we have someone that would move that bill for her? Representative Newton?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 457.
All right. Be laid over for possible inclusion. Very good. Would you, Representative Fritz, tell us what House File 457 is?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Actually, I do have with me today, along with the Superintendent Harper, I do have Katie Roth, who is the dietitian and food service supervisor down there, and that is a big job, feeding all these kids. I've had meals down there when bonding has come down, and some of you on bonding in years past, I've also, that's where we feed you when you come down to Faribault to see the bonding proposals. I never looked in the kitchen to see the equipment. Now I wish I had, because my new superintendent here just happened to drop the comment in a meeting that we were having with Representative Hausman about a bonding proposal about the kitchen and how antiquated and inept it is to use. And so we talked about how old it was in the 60s, I believe, the equipment. And so we talked about bonding it, and Representative Hausman said you should take that to Representative Paul Marquardt's committee. So that's why we're here. We're asking for $85,000 for some, not pots and pans, but equipment, stoves, and refrigeration, and the like. And I'm going to ask and turn it over, if I could please, to Katie Roth, who could talk a little bit more in depth about that.
Thank you, Ms. Roth. And please state your name.
We have had a few pieces of equipment have been continually breaking down over the past couple of years. If you think of the longevity of the equipment we've had, it's been amazing. Our ovens actually are the original ovens. The building was built in 1924. So the ovens we've been using for that period of time have worked wonderfully over the years, but now they're just to the point where there isn't parts to fix them anymore. Maintenance staff continually come to our kitchens on a weekly, if not daily, basis to try and help us get those ovens running. So from 1924, that's a good number of years, and it's just time to be replaced. Another piece of equipment that we're trying to replace right now is our dishwasher. We acquired that in 1980. That was about 33 years now. What's different with our kitchens is that we are three-meal-a-day kitchen. We have breakfast, lunch, and dinner for our students. And so our machines run more than normal, or more than public schools. So for 33 years, three meals a day, it's antiquated. We can't find parts to fix it anymore. And so that's another piece of equipment that we would like to get replaced. These two are big ticket items. We're looking at two range ovens. The total for those would be around $29,032. And then we're also looking for one dish machine, and we're looking at $32,331. Those are the average quotes that we found for these two items. Our physical plant director, he has also indicated that he's looking at an additional $23,637. Would cover the dismantling, the disposing existing equipment, and other related installation costs likely to occur because of the age of the equipment. So those are the two things that we are looking at.
Ms. Roth, thank you so much. 89 years for a stove. Not now, but offline. I'd like to know the brand of that stove. My word. That'd be the last one I'd have to buy.
The Garland Company, and they're still in business. So we're looking to purchase from them.
I think you're going to have a lot of people are going to be talking to you afterwards here. Let's see. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just going to ask our testifier, have they talked to the building code people? I just know that I've heard other people doing kitchen projects commercially, and they've run into having to spend more than they had planned on because of code requirements.
These quotes, Ms. actually, we've gotten three different quotes now.
Mr. Harper.
May I respond a little bit? The building that the food service is in is called Rodman Hall, and there are significant plans to rebuild Rodman and to create a new commons and food service area. That's in our future, but the concerns that you have about code and things from that standpoint, I think will be addressed with the concept that we can take the new equipment, assuming that we get funding for that. We can move the new equipment to the new buildings once they're constructed, and that the code issues that you're referring to, we can address on site at this point. Our physical plant director has indicated that we should be all right from that standpoint, although there will be some concerns to make sure that we're doing things properly.
I think Representative Hertaus, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment about those ovens. Representative Woodard and I leaned over and said they just don't make them like they used to. And if we replace these ovens, she'll be back in 10 years. 10 years.
So you're wondering, Representative Hertaus, if we could get another 20 years off of this oven or stove? I mean, I'm thinking, I think President Coolidge was, I mean, I think, you know, if you still have appliances back in the Coolidge administration, that it's probably time to, you know, replace some of these. I think this is a very fair request. But
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chair, I grew up in Chicago, and back in the 1920s, the Cubs were considered a serious baseball team.
At least they didn't wrestle.
Representative Ann Zelk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Seriously, committee members, this request, of course, is just and must be done, of course, but it just strikes me as a little peculiar that a request of this nature has to actually come before the legislature. And looking down the road a bit and into the future, I'm sure we can figure out a better way to factor in these kinds of capital improvements into the State Academy and other state buildings and services that we provide. So I would encourage the young ones on the committee to look toward the future a little bit.
And Representative Anzalk, I am worried about what Representative Chair Hausman's going to be sending our way next. But no, that's Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anzalk, as the leader of the Young Caucus, I would be happy to take a look at that. Just a question about the $85,000. It's not in the governor's budget plan, is that correct?
No.
Representative Fritz? Or
no.
No, okay.
So if
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if it's not, if for some reason the $85,000 was not in the K-12 omnibus bill, is there a bonding bill that you're looking at as well that this could potentially be tagged on to or in the future?
Representative Fritz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Woodard, I hope so. We don't know. We went to Representative Hausman with another request, and then this subject came up, and then we decided to do this, to appear here at this committee. This is our first stop. But I did say to the superintendent while we were waiting that we will also put this bill in bonding. I will ask for a bonding proposal, and I need it. We just have to get this done. This is and also let me just add, what great stewards of our property these folks are. And this, I see this examples of this over and over and over down there. And the position that he's talking about, the teachers that teach down there are multitaskers, mm-hmm. With very multiply handicapped students. And this is a small appropriation, but for very good stewards and very necessary. So I'm going to try and get it any way and anywhere that I can. And I haven't talked to the governor yet, but I will if I have to.
Well, as a legislature, and whether or not it's through this committee or another, we have to get this done. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. So, any other Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and. I appreciate Representative Ansel's, forethought in that, but I think the legislators in the next century, they'll be looking at, since the same company is in business, may have options there, but I would suggest that we also make sure that there is no sales tax, impact on this project. I don't know how that aspect of the law will change, but make sure that we, supply sufficient funds and maybe exempt such projects from sales tax.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fritz, you and I have been around here for a while. Do you recall a time when the general fund has been asked to appropriate dollars for something outside the educational purview for the academies? Because I don't.
Representative Fritz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I've been racking my mind, too, trying to remember if and when that has ever happened. I do recall, I think there was something, but I don't think we did it. But and again, I did think this was a leap of faith for me to come here with this, but it still is. If Linda Mitchell were here,
right,
she would remember, and I could ask her that too if there was any appropriation for the state academies over the last 150 years. I don't have that knowledge, but again, we're here.
We should do a little historical, and maybe Mr. Strom can help us track. I know we've discussed in this committee residential, et cetera, improvements to the facilities, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure if they've been appropriated out of the general fund. And obviously, I'm surprised the health department hasn't visited you. he must be doing a fantastic job of providing the best service, because otherwise I think the Department of Health would be visiting you. And but it seems to me this is a capital improvement, and we have an obligation in the bonding bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, Representative Erickson and Representative Anzell, you bring up a great point and a great question. I mean, this is certainly a project that needs to be done now. And, of course, this is not a typical bonding year, so there's no assurance there would be a bonding bill. And yet this has to be done. And so I think is what I'm hearing from members, you know, is there a way? I think we, Representative Woodard is the young, you know, legislators there. We need to come up with a method that we're not coming back here for items like this. I mean, really, this is something that just should be part of some other process where you can just do this and not have to come here for replacing an 89-year-old oven. I mean, really. So, but Representative Mr. Strom, do you have any historical basis on this? And this stove was, I think, produced before you were even here. So
no, Mr. Chair, as was mentioned, there the majority of the physical plant needs of the Faribault Academies are met through the bonding bill, and there is also with the state capital asset preservation. There's money for
yes.
Routine sort of maintenance issues, but I'm not sure that. That we've ever done a grant for equipment or on the facility side. I'll look through some old bills, but I'm not aware of us doing that, at least since my time here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to remind the committee of a decorum. I noticed some snickering going on when you mentioned that I was a member of the Young Caucus. I just want to remind the committee that we do have a certain decorum. We should be.
I will admonish committee members for those actions there. Very good, Representative Woodard. We always need that reminder. So, anything else for the Representative Hertaus?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe the solution to your question is the bill should be retitled to a student maintenance program, educational program for oven replacement.
I'll accept that.
Well, Representative Fritz and Mr. Harper, Ms. Roth, yes, thank you for the great work you're doing. And just, I think it's very indicative when you come here with a request for some appliance that is 89 years old. I think the stewardship of our public dollars are being well taken care of. So with that, any last words, Representative Fritz, before
well,
we lay this
I
over?
I think that pretty you said it all, Mr. Chairman, and I also want to thank all of you for hearing us out and for giving us the time to come with this today.
Very good. So thank you much. We'll lay over House File 457.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I guess everyone have a great weekend. We've got on Tuesday we'll hear the governor's education budget bill, and then that night we have the world's best workforce and nothing on Wednesday. Have a great weekend, and we are adjourned.